game. Well, hello, anglers, and welcome to the Ease of Kayak Fishing on kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike from kayakfishing.com, and I'll be talking about all kinds of stuff with our round table of experts tonight. We've already got Captain Chip Gibson online. Anybody give you that title before, Chip?
Not until I got promoted to major.
Wow. The first time I got it, I looked him square in the eye and said, hey, I think you have to have a motor for that title.
That's right.
It's been a good week. I hope everybody else has had a good one. The weather around the country seems to be calming down, thank goodness. Things are returning to normal just about everywhere but in the flood zones. Here on the California coast, we're having a very docile summer. Coming into the fall, the temps are cool. The conditions are calm. We had an abalone die-off and an emergency closure we'll talk about later. I also want to talk about the jumbo squid, not the giant squids. Those are the big ones that battle with sperm whales. But the jumbo squid, they got up to 6 feet long and 100 pounds, and it's a surprising, exciting new fishery on the eastern Pacific. Only been around since about 2004. I also want to talk about forecast tools, things we use in our planning for a day of kayak fishing, print publications. We've gone through so many changes in the last few years, I should say, that I think people's media interests and attention has gotten far off. Now, from the Angler Awards last night, I think we got some pretty good direction on what anglers like for their print publications, huh?
Yeah.
You with me there? What was the top winner? Kayak Angler Magazine.
Kayak Angler Magazine, that's
right. And I'll bet no surprise to anybody. It's well-read, well-circulated, well-talked about, and darn near one of the prettiest publications I've ever seen.
It's a nice rag.
A few guests logging in. I want to thank you for that. Log in, log out, log in. A nice rag. You know, it's funny. I had put rags, print rags, in my notes, in my outline for the show, and then I crossed rags out and put Matt Publishers, print publication.
I'm old school, man.
It's just, you know, that's that writer's lingo. And it is true. I like the kind of rag that sits around the house and just about becomes part of the Angler library. And
read the words off the pages, man.
You know, the way I got my whole situation started here, too, I like to be able to read the word off the pages. The way I got started with this whole kayak fishing thing that led to kayakfishing.com was by writing furiously. And the only criticism that I really had, besides one article that said I never gave the anglers any information on the topic, which was budget fishing in Cabo. I talked about it, but I never directed them. The only editorial direction I ever really got from Pacific Fisherman magazine was that, and this was not a glossy magazine. It took a lot of heat for the quality of its production, but the content back in, I'd say, 1984, when I first got interested in all of this, I had been fishing my kayak for quite a few years, and reading the magazine for at least 5 years, California Angler and then Pacific Fisherman. And there was one point right before I got real serious about kayak fishing where I realized, serious enough to make it a livelihood, I realized that reading this magazine, as crummy as the pictures might have been, as non-state-of-the-art as the layout was, that everything I learned, every month I got an issue, I learned something from the articles that I read. And it's really hard for writers, and I know we have a lot of writers who come into on the round table and who tune in to Kayak Fishing Radio, and a lot of what we see is, especially in sport fishing, the same article rewritten once a year for 50 years, and how do you make it fresh? And the kayaks brought that freshness not only to all of sport fishing, but they brought that freshness to the individual topics too. Because when you do it from a kayak, it becomes that much more exciting. And we found that people who read the kayak fishing articles, the majority of them are people who will never kayak fish. But like us, their love for fishing, recreational fishing, is so deep that they pick up that excitement through what they're reading and through the pictures that they're seeing. And that's always been my editorial direction, whether it's with the website and in my interactions with anglers, which we invite through kayakfishing.com, especially the entry level. That's what that site's there for, to give people direction and even give them a phone number and email address if they really need some hardcore direction. But leaving people with information, you know, it gets them into the sport quicker. It cuts down that learning curve, and it definitely saves them money. I've met a lot of people who came back to the sport when they had left, they previously left, because they had some kind of disaster or yard sale in the course of fishing where they lost or ruined gear or otherwise humiliated themselves. And it was just the shortcuts. They didn't know any better. Everybody, you know, wants to get out and figure it out themselves. You agree with all that, Chip Gibson?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. That's why we started the Boondoggles.
Just to network people
To give folks an opportunity to come out and meet some of the local names of kayak fishing in their area.
So
you know,
do you see first timers coming out to the Boondoggles or real novice anglers too?
Absolutely. At our first Boondoggle at Little Talbot in Jacksonville, we had three fellows who were out there, didn't own kayaks, you know, and we had extra, we bring along extra kayaks with us for people to paddle around, you know. I mean, we don't want to take unless there's a local guide there with us, we wouldn't take them out because of the liability issues. But,
sure,
you know, we just show them the differences between the kayaks and stuff like that. And, I mean, if it's doable, you know, we'll get them out there. Like our upcoming Boondoggle, it looks like we're going to get some special consideration from the local kayak outfitter there. Timeout Sports, I believe, is the name of it. Dolphin Dave is mentioned, you know, maybe giving us a special deal for folks who want to rent kayaks to come out with us. So,
nice.
Yeah,
you know, so. And that's the beauty. It doesn't matter. I've seen the full spectrum of events and causes, but the bottom line is that I think of all of sport fishing, of all of recreational fishing, the kayak angler community has got to be the most solid, the biggest growing, and got the biggest heart and best direction. You know, I think a lot of the guys with the yachts and the tournament fishers, they really only appeal to their own kind, if you will. But the fact is that in kayak fishing, we've got our kind, we've got their kind, and we've got just about everybody.
Right.
So that brings me to some other stuff. I know when it comes to fish and wildlife, fish and game, the services, the management changes, and what I'm trying to say is they're different governments from state to state. But here in California, especially in the last couple of years, California has really grasped their website. The California Department of Fish and Game has grasped their website. They've got managers running it. They're doing press releases. They're networking with recreational anglers and hunters and outdoor users. They're networking with business and commercial fishing. And they're sending out press releases. And there's stuff, I mean, I'm on the wire seeing this action as it happens. And within the hour, I'm getting a press release on decisions from Fish and Game. And that's nice to see. However, we are in a big political process. And I know that in this community of kayak anglers, we've got every opinion and every side of it, that and every position from the anglers that we see in the newspapers and in all the issues. And the bottom line, this is a community that is represented from left to right. A lot of our concerns, regardless of who we vote for and where we want to see the planet and the country go, the reality is we share a huge common bond in fishery preservation and sustainability. And we all have a common goal in that regard, which is, I think, why in this community we see so many people of different opinions and positions getting along just fine. There's a lot of respect there. But a lot comes down here in the state of California. It comes down fast and furious, and it doesn't seem to me like the voters and the angler lobbies have quite grasped, and by lobbies I mean us, the anglers, have quite grasped the politics. We have the Marine Life Protection Act, which is an absolute travesty on fishing, fisheries, anglers, and angler rights. And this is all tied up in the courts right now, although a few marine areas have been closed for protection in this process. And then I come to see that Governor Jerry Brown has reappointed the deputy director of Fish and Game. And this is a guy who, if you look at his resume, I'll bet he could get a top job with any environmentalist organization there out there. And suddenly there was a cry, and this is the point that I'm getting to, is fishing lobbies, those organizations who represent us and the businesses and are supported by, in large part, the businesses that sell us goods and services. And right away, the Sport Fishing American Sport Fishing Association, the ASA, and you're all familiar with it, Chip?
Yes.
The American Sport Fishing Association, the ASA, comes out and has a beautifully formatted webpage for how California voters can contact the governor and their representatives and let them know that we'd like to see another appointment, that this is not an appointment in the best interest of California's anglers and fisheries. And this is some pretty radical politics, in my opinion. My point being that I believe it is probably less than 1% of the anglers who buy a fishing license who even know what I'm talking about. And you don't want to say that they don't care, but they're not informed. Which leads me to another area, and that's, what do we read? Who informs us? How do we stay informed? The TV shows are out there showing us the latest lures and the biggest fish. And what are we leaving every half-hour episode with as far as fishery conservation? And I'm not saying everybody's guilty. There are plenty of shows out there, and the bigger and better of all of them are donating money to fishery resource and fishery preservation. But in the big picture, I think like any other form of social education, educating anglers is our most important goal. And it used to be a lot easier. There used to be more newspapers, more fishing magazines, and more of a journalistic sense of editorial responsibility. And that is something that we don't see a lot anymore. For all the great fishing rags out there, and I admittedly don't get to read all of them enough, but I've always been impressed with Sport Fishing Magazine, and especially the editor-in-chief, Doug Olander, who not many people know had a big hand in growing, as a writer, in growing kayak fishing as fast as it did. Doug is, if I were to take 10 guys who were industry leaders, who were at the forefront of making this sport national and global, Doug Olander, who is a dedicated kayak angler with a garage full of boats, handful of them anyway, is one of those guys. on the West Coast here. Now, that's out of Florida. I know that Bonaire took over that magazine, and now all the publications that, or the majority of the publications that used to be competitors are now under the same grand house, although they operate independently. But that journalistic responsibility is all important in educating guys like you and me, the anglers who need to act and make change, because there is too much on the other side, and that's extreme environmentalism, that would rather see our rods and reels burned like books and kids not taught about fishing in school and fishing not ingrained into the next generations as a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. Do you think I'm ranting now?
What do you think that is?
What's that?
Why would somebody not want us to fish?
You know, we are in a big area of, not a big area, we're in a big presence of social change and social attitude and social opinion. And early in my career, when we had the first kayak fishing forums, the bulletin board system at kayakfishing.com, I made a comment which was not a very nice one. I've always been proud that I keep Disney-style G-rated forums at kayakfishing.com in the early day. And you want to talk about generating hate mail. that'll do it. Tell a guy he can't use a bad word or state an unsafe opinion as gospel, and the hate mail is going to flow. But one thing that I did, and it was something like, you know, like getting toothpaste back in the tube, I beat up vegans as a group. I attacked extreme, I associated extreme anti-fishing environmentalist activities with vegans. And I had a preacher contact me who was a fan up until that moment anyway, and had a congregation that included vegans who were nice people, and the guy taught me a lesson. But I think where we've gotten is the population has grown very quickly. The influx of people, not only from the country to the cities, but from other countries to our country, who had lost fishing as a national tradition centuries ago. And, you know, mostly Europe, and decades ago in Asia, where you know, people used to go out and fish to feed themselves until there were no fish. All of a sudden, people are coming to America, and on one hand, we're seeing some life breathing back into recreational fishing, but in the bigger sense, too many people are moving out of the country into the city, and they're not teaching their kids to fish. And that's for a variety of reasons, because they have social positions that conflict with going out and what they perceive is killing fishies, taking life, or they're coming from backgrounds where they weren't ingrained with fishing either. And I'm thankful that it was my mom who got me started. I tell this story all the time. I've credited her in articles. Back in the early 60s, my dad got a job that took him traveling as a salesman around the country. I'm sure none of you guys were born then. And on long weekends, when Dad was gone 2 or 3 weeks, Mom would take my brother and I, and we'd go fish Malibu Pier, Santa Monica Pier, Venice Pier. We'd go spend a weekend in Newport and San Diego and fish the piers. And occasionally, when Dad was home on the road, we'd take a family vacation. We'd go out on charter boat, Los Angeles or Ensenada, Mexico. And, man, you talk about ingraining, and that's where I see it's so important. And I used to laugh about early on when I got into the sport, there was a big campaign, which exists today, and I'm sure is nationwide, take a kid fishing. And I used to laugh because the guys who were promoting it, it seemed to be a bit of a generation gap going on there. And it just felt superficially to me like they were embracing, you know, an old mantra. And then as I got more and more into it, I realized how important that mantra they were embracing was for the survival of what we do as again, a wholesome, a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. And I just think that's the way. So it's our responsibility. I hate to offer a problem without a solution. It's our responsibility to teach our children's cousins, nephews, friends, and friends' kids about sports fishing, to introduce them to it. It's not even a teaching thing. You know, it's peanut butter and chocolate for most people. When it hits them, it sticks. And for those who it doesn't stick, we know that too. But it sticks for most people when you introduce them, especially when you introduce them young. And but the thing is, we're never going to be able to educate kids without educating the anglers that are already in the fold, because they're our best tool for access. And that's really passing on a sense of conscientiousness to them, that no guilt for not having it. They just are having a good time fishing, and that's what it's all about. But unfortunately, and especially for somebody who's been around longer than most, we see how important it is to take that active hand. In states like Florida, the states around the Chesapeake Bay, some of the inland waters where they dealt more with access issues than they did actual fishery issues, and now these areas, inland areas, that are exploding with fishery issues like the carp, all the way to the West Coast where we have Marine Life Protection Act, all of these, what I consider travesties against anglers and the soul, the heart and soul of sport fishing, have come into existence because anglers are sleeping as a powerful group. We're just enjoying our sport, and we're not doing enough to educate other anglers who are in turn going to educate their kids and bring them up right. We're still trying, you know, we're still patting ourselves on the back because we've been able to turn the tides on poaching being acceptable. But we can't pat our backs because there are much bigger forces out there who think it's better not to do what we do, not to have fishing as a wholesome family activity, and aren't going to teach their kids. You know, look at all those Norman Rockwell prints. And Norman Rockwell was just the most famous of them, who captured a lot of Americana, including the fishing aspect of it. But Rockwell was just the biggest of them. Through art and culture throughout America, throughout the history of America, sport fishing has been an integral part of it. And it's my responsibility to rant on and do more than rant on to bring that back into the forefront, because the truth is the people who don't want us to fish and all the reasons behind it, which are not science-based reasons, and this is what comes out with every issue and every fishery and is especially coming out on the West Coast with Marine Life Protection Act, it doesn't make any sense at all. And it's like one of those feel-good causes that doesn't do any good for anybody and actually does bad for the fishery. Am I killing you guys, Chuck? I see all in there in the chat room. Chip, did I keep you on board?
I'm here, man. I was just thinking, I didn't get to see it last night because we did the reveal of the Kayak Anglers Choice Awards, but I usually, in my studio here in downtown Atlanta, I have my TV, and I usually on Thursday nights have the Florida Insider Fishing Report up. It's about the same time, one of the repeat comes on about the same time that we're doing the Thursday night show.
Yeah, that's what D was on a week ago, I remember.
Right, and so last week, that same episode, Captain Rick Murphy is the host, and pretty popular guide and longtime captain down in Florida. And he was really getting on the fishermen because they're starting type, an MLPA type issue there in Biscayne and around the Upper Keys. And he's like, you know, if you guys don't show up to these things, you're going to get what they give you.
And he's telling it like it is, and he's paying attention.
Yeah.
And Captain Murphy has seen quite a history there, too. He's seen
Absolutely.
This happen before. And instead of seeing a de-escalation in the oppression towards angling, we're actually seeing an escalation. And to a guy like him, to all of us, it's confounding. It is. It amazes me how many California anglers are still not aware of Marine Life Protection Act and its implication on them. And it's been going on for about 12 years now. Do you guys ever hear the Western Outdoor News, a weekly fishing and hunting publication in California? This is a paper magazine, a print color magazine. I'm sorry, a print newspaper that comes out 52 weeks a year and gives as accurate and up-to-date as they can fishing and hunting reports. And they do have editors with a journalistic sense. They go to all of the state fish and game board and commission meetings. They keep anglers apprised. They rally the cause. They support the United Anglers of California and of Southern California. And they get the word out. There is a similar publication that has gotten very popular in the last, I'd say, probably 7 or 8 years, called The Fish Sniffer, which is another newsprint publication. I believe it might come out bimonthly. I'm not sure about that. And I know that when I was doing shows in Chicago, there's a good newspaper publication for outdoorsmen in the Midwest region there. I don't remember the name of it. You've got something. There is one publication that started up in Florida and the Southeast, and it was actually a guy who came from Western Outdoor News. Do you remember what it's called?
I think it's Florida Outdoor News because I just jumped onto their website. And I'm looking at it, and it's basically the same format as one we get here in Georgia, because it says WON News, and we have the
News. Okay, one news is Western Outdoors News.
Western Outdoors News.
Yeah, California's one news is Western Outdoors.
Yeah, California's only sportsman's news since 1953.
Right. And this is really the staple for getting up-to-date information because it comes out weekly, and they've got reporters right there in these meetings and doing a great job of communicating these issues to anglers. But again, I mean, like any print publication, like any media publication, the ones who are growing and successful are the exception. With the cost of mail, the cost of shipping, the cost of publication, this magazine does not have the strength and circulation and reach that it once had. I believe it can again. But, you know, again, back to that same thing, educating anglers. And it's funny, through the course of the year, I tend to do a lot of, like I'll loan the tournament scales out, the kayakfishing.com tournament scales out, and I'll go out and do raffles, raise money for good causes and stuff like that, anglers that are down, fisheries that are in need of help. And it's a lot of fun. I love doing that stuff. But nobody gets away without the guilt. I mean, everybody... All right, I just muted somebody there. I'll get you back online. There we go. And but, you know, I always give a little spiel when I got a big group of people in front of me and try to convey some sense of consciousness, maybe bring up some issue, something that affects them close to home that hopefully they'll think about afterwards and pick up that magazine, pick up that newspaper, you know, jump onto the Fish and Game website. I got to tell you, that website is really unbelievable. California Department of Fish and Game has a mind-blowing website. Who have we got calling in from the 978 area code?
Hey, Spiker, this is Greg. Can you hear me okay?
How you doing, Greg? Loud and clear.
Oh, good. I'm driving here on the way to lunch and go fishing.
Where are you headed?
I'm heading into Boston Harbor.
It's striper time.
Yep.
How you been doing? You been getting a few?
Oh, I did pretty good. I didn't do pretty good last weekend. My son got his first striper last weekend.
It happened. Congratulations. I knew that was a given.
Yeah. So that
congratulations to both of you.
Yep. That was great. But hopefully tonight I'll get some.
It's funny because I've been doing some guiding here on the Pacific Coast for the King Salmon, and just every client I have taken out has hit the beach with a 20-pound salmon, and there is some kind of stink on my boat because I'm not even getting bites. The tide will change, however. What other news you got for us, Greg?
That's about it. I just called in to listen a little bit and say hi.
Well, we're glad you did. We're glad you did. Appreciate that. I was just getting ready to talk about our coast here. We've had the conditions are crazy. I've been talking for several weeks about the red tide that came in back in August, and it was a full thickness, oxygen depleting, toxin including red tide that caused a die-off of abalone, clams, coastal mussels, crabs, invertebrates, and created quite a mess on the beach. Yesterday, the California Park and Fish and Game Commission met. Three out of the five board members were able to meet, commissioners, and made an emergency closure of the abalone fishery in Sonoma County only. The abalone fishery in California sells about 34,000 to 35,000 permits on average every year. So it's a big tourist industry. It's a big local fishery. People come from afar, brings a lot of business in. And of those 35,000 licenses that are sold, 95% of the abalone are taken from two counties, Sonoma and Mendocino. And just to give you a visual picture, you have San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge. Once you get north of that is Marin County on the coast. Then you have Sonoma, and then you have Mendocino. 95% yep. of the take of abalone in about a six-month season comes from Sonoma and Mendocino counties, and now Sonoma County is closed. It's a good thing. They've had divers in the water for a couple of weeks, and the worst estimates I've read is that 30% of the abalone died in that red tide, which is kind of good news because these events have happened in the past. This is the first time it's ever been seen at this magnitude. And what I was concerned with is that the red tide, you know, the abalone live from the intertidal zone into some pretty deep water, probably 60, 70 feet or deeper. And if the red tide was a full thickness red tide, it would have wiped out 100% of the nearshore population. And by the surveys the Department of Fish and Game divers, the biologists have done, a lot of these are scientists too from UC Davis, University of Davis here in California, who run programs out of the Bodega Head Marine Lab. So we've got some of the best science in the world working on not only the abalone issue, but all the California fishery issues. But the worst damage they found was only a 30% die-off on the abalone in some of my most frequently fished spots. And we'll see how that pans out. I believe that the emergency closure for the one county only is an okay thing. Anybody who's got a license, wants to buy one, still wants to take abalone, can run 30, 40 minutes up the line and still get in the water and have very, very good fishing grounds. But these are slow-growing animals, and it's going to take a few years to get them back to where they were now. I've had a lot of questions about this. How much of it is a natural occurrence? How much of it has to do with change of the oceans, global warming, pollution, changes in currents related to global warming. And from everything I'm reading, these are all real viable questions that the scientists and the researchers are trying to get ahead on and figure out now. Other things that impact the fishery. A couple years ago, I did an article for, you still find it too, if you search jumbo squid or squid on Outdoor Life Online, their online magazine. I did a little photo gallery, captioned photo gallery on giant squidfish, on jumbo squid fishing. These are the 6-foot squids that exist in the Humboldt Current. That's why they're called Humboldt squid. They grow to six
yep.
feet long. Hello. I don't want to cut anybody off.
Mean?
You know I can talk like a chainsaw.
Humboldt squid, you're talking about them?
Everybody's good. The Humboldt squid are about 6 feet long, up to 6 feet long, and that's without the tentacles, and up to 100 pounds. They are quite a beast. And they're called Humboldt squid because they live mainly in the Humboldt Current that runs all the way from Northern California down to South America out in front of Peru. And they find the squid there. They also dip around the point of Cabo San Lucas, and run up into the Sea of Cortez. In fact, about 6 or 7 years ago when I was living and guiding down on the East Cape in Mexico, we would paddle out in during the day and using our squid jigs catch 35, 45-pound jumbo squids from the kayaks in daylight. And it was quite an event. And I got to tell you, everybody tells you how tough and mean they are when they come to the boat. That's when you're fishing with a boat. You hook up a giant squid, he pulls the kayak around for a while. They come up tired, just like a big bass. So a big white sea bass, I should say.
Dude, them things got beaks on them the size of a velociraptor.
The size of an avocado pit, anyway. And they will take a serious chunk of skin out of you. But, you know, landing them on the kayaks we found to be pretty easy. And I do this the same way when I'm fishing them on the boats, when given the opportunity, instead of gaffing them and just bringing them on board. I keep a long fillet knife with me. And the animals, the jumbo squids, are very tired when they come up. They take a lot of deep runs. And on the way up, the other cannibal squid are attacking them. So you'll be fighting a heavy squid, 30, 40, 50 pounds, and all of a sudden you get pulled over, and you're pulling on twice, three times the weight. It's because other squids have attacked the one you've got hooked on the way up. And they break loose after a minute, but your squid comes up with such suction mark scars on it from the other squids attacking it. And by the time it gets up to the side of the kayak, they're usually coming up from 300-400 feet minimum, and they're pretty tired. I just take the fillet knife and I slit the length of the body. The ink comes out, they die in a matter of seconds, put them on the gaff, slide them right over into the boat. And, you know, there's a bunch of wonderful things. You guys, let me interject real quick one thing here into my own ramblings. I want to thank everybody who's coming into the chat room and the Flash Chat. And I especially want to thank Chip, who I'm sure is typing away right there. I am adding a screen to the home studio here and will be able better to manage this. And I'm sure Chip is going to let me know if anybody's got any questions.
I've been doing it for almost 2 years, man. It takes a little getting used to.
I'm telling you, I need two more hands and one more eye. So, but it's coming together. I want to thank everybody for logging on.
It looks like Greg made it to the boat ramp. He just dropped off the call. So.
Oh, right. I figured that's what it was. Oh, I'm eating my heart out here. Perfect time to be going out, too. The jumbo squids, and there are jumbo squid and there are giant squid. The truth is the giant squids are those big ones, 50 to 70 footers and bigger, that battle, that are eaten by big whales and sperm whales are often found floating dead on the surface with big marks and injuries from these squids on them. I've seen whales turn in the water that had suction marks on them. It's an amazing thing to see. The jumbo squid, the smaller ones that are usually under 100 pounds, these are a delicious squid, and this is the majority of what you see in, I don't know if you guys have Trader Joe's back there, but the markets that offer frozen calamari steaks, these are the jumbo squids. And primarily they're fished down in Mexico. There isn't much of a commercial operation up here. And they don't know much about these jumbo squids. One thing they do know, and that's I was doing interviews earlier this week, and one of the skippers told me, well, there's one thing he'll tell me for sure, when the jumbo squid fishing was at its best, the salmon fishery was at a catastrophic collapse. Now, we haven't heard any of the scientists, any of the fish and game people, biologists, researchers talking about that. But I've heard a lot of boat captains talking about that. And as I research the jumbo squid, they talk about how they do wipe out populations of, they're voracious feeders. All they do is eat. They eat everything, too, including each other. And they have been known to come in and wipe out rockfish populations, near shore and deep water rockfish populations that take years to recover another slow growing fish. There's also, I talked to boat captains who suggested, actually I didn't talk, I read about interviews, boat captains in Southern California who said after the giant squid are here, there are no more sand bass. They've experienced the sand bass are gone for a few years. Do they come in and clean the bottom? It's quite possible. The jumbo squid, these fish get up to 100 pounds. They only live for 1 to 2 years. So you can imagine that. And they start out like little squids, the one we eat in the restaurants. You can imagine that kind of growth in 1 to 2 years, how much volume they have to consume. So they're just starting to study them. One thing they have determined is that there's been a fairly stable resident population of jumbo squid on the California coast since 2004. Now, they didn't really show up last year, and this year we've got a good salmon bite, good numbers in the water. Of course, we had a catastrophic red tide. Nobody really knows what it's about, and time and research will tell. Chip, anything to add?
No, but I'm going to stick Isaac there on you, man.
What's that?
Isaac's coming in. Isaac's going to dial in a sec.
Right,
and join in your squid discussion.
I'll be looking for him. There we go. Isaac the Nothing.
Mr. Nothing.
I'll be looking for him there. You know, how many times in how many areas do we actually get a new fishery? And that's what the squid's all about. You know, these party boat captains used to fish the rockfish, the halibut, year-round. Now the halibut aren't here, but seasonally, and the rockfish, you're only allowed to fish anywhere, depending on where you're at, from 4 to 6 months a year. So come December, January, February, these guys were sitting around lucky to get some crab trips, taking people on their boats who normally would have been fishing for something fishy, and now they're going out just to pull pots. Again, when Dungeness crab costs $7, $8, $9 a pound in the stores, and you can catch it for the cost of bait, 10 a day, figure the way, that's 20 to 30 pounds of crab every day. You know, it's worth fishing for. But again, it's more worth it for us on our little boats than having to go out with 35 of your closest personal friends on a party boat belching diesel and run out for 2 hours, check the pots, turn around, come back. Where'd my $90 go? So that's what drove us into the kayaks. You know, I should probably bring my screen back up here. I put that cursor in the corner. And are you there, Isaac?
I am here.
Happy Friday, man. How's everything in the North Country?
Hey, everything up here is great. You know, this week reminded us that it's actually fall. Last week, this time, it was 90 degrees, sun. This week, it's been 70s, cold. a little bit of wet even, but it's been good. Getting ready for a bass tournament tomorrow.
Where's that going to be?
The bass tournament's hosted by Next Adventure Paddle Sports here in Portland and is open to all public waters within a 50-mile radius of their store. So,
my kind of tournament.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of options. I'm still not willing to give up where I'm going. I'll save that for my show on Tuesday where I go. But the Willamette River, of course, killer place for smallmouth. Hag Lake in Oregon is open. It's been the lake that's picked up the last two state records for Oregon. Silver Lake in Washington is within that 50-mile radius, and that is an insanely awesome bass fishery, especially in the Pacific Northwest. Silver Lake in the west side of Washington, not to be confused with the Silver Lake on the east side of Washington. In western Washington, that smallmouth bass fishery in Silver Lake is phenomenal. There's guys who make living. There's guides on that lake, and that's all they do is smallmouth bass fish. So you know the fishing there is good. But, yeah, so I'm getting stoked, getting ready for that. I've got most of the gear ready. I'm going to bring up all of my crankbaits and tie new feathers on the tails here tonight. And just getting ready for that.
We need a win for Kayak Fishing Radio, Isaac.
That we do. I haven't seen a podium in a couple of years, so I'm ready to get back into it.
Greg, if you got your ears on, we need a striper for Kayak Fishing Radio tonight, too. So I'm looking forward to those reports next week.
You bet.
Isaac, what do you got to tell me about the squid bite up there? Do you get it?
You know what? I have not been squid fishing. I've thought about it more than once. As global warming, I don't know if it's global warming, if it's El Nino, or if it's just natural order, but the Humboldt squid have really picked up here in Oregon.
All the way up to Alaska some years.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I love to eat me some squid. It's good eats. You know,
I got to cut in with a quick story.
Yeah.
I'm guiding a group down in Mexico, down at La Bufadora, the blowhole, and it was a surreal place. It was a tourist attraction on the coast, big blowhole water coming up, and a white shark swimming right up to my boat down there. We had crazy experiences. One day I walk into a restaurant, and the group wanted to have drinks after fishing, and they had a bar menu up, and they had a calamari burger. And I'm telling you, to this day, it is one of the best burgers I ever had in my life. And every time I catch the squid, the jumbos, and bring them home, we make calamari burgers. And we make them, we thin slice the full thickness of the mantle into about 4 or 5 layers, and then pound it like abalone, a little Lowry seasoning salt. And it is a sensational sandwich.
All right. I bet it is. Hey, going into food. I love food, and I'm a fishmonger by trade.
Oh, nice.
Anybody going out there, they're worried about cooking squid, because squid and calamari, very different to cook. You cook it up to a point where it's tender, and it's wonderful. But if you take it past that point where you overcook it,
you kill it.
It's tough. It's hard. You can't eat it. But Here's the secret. If you overcook it and it's tough, throw it back in the oven. Cook it longer.
Forever.
If you super cook it, it goes right back to that tender stage, and it is so good. That's the best part about squid. You can screw it up, but you can fix it if you do. So
I learned that secret by watching the Spanish cook octopus.
They cook it all day long.
For hours.
Yeah.
And it's butter in your mouth by the time it's done. Yep. My rule for cooking fish and seafood has always been, depending on the thickness of whatever you're cooking and the heat that it's on, to get it right until it's about to cook into the middle and then pull it off the heat. Whether it's a halibut fillet, a piece of striped bass, or a lobster tail, and that heat, when it comes off of the flame, is going to finish it. And that's, I believe, Isaac, where you get that perfect doneness in seafood.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I promote the use of thermometers totally.
I can't cook without one anymore.
And my secret, I tell everyone, 130 to 135 for seafood. Because by the time you get it on the plate, it'll carry over. Yeah, it'll carry over. It'll be perfect every time. But anyway.
That's about the coolest thing I've learned tonight on this show, and I like it.
Excellent. But anyway, this is a fishing show. I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've been on your show, so I'm pretty sure it's a fishing show.
I appreciate you calling in.
You bet. I'm stoked to go fishing. We got that big tournament going on. I don't know how many people are going to actually be in the tournament. I don't have those numbers yet. But last I heard, of course, Oregon and Washington will be represented. I heard that there could be some guys coming from Idaho all the way out to do a little bass fishing in the Portland area.
That's great.
Stoked for that. That's going to go on. The squid, man. You know, I haven't heard a whole lot this year about the squid.
They didn't show up really last year.
Anyway. They were all here. I mean, they were washing up on beaches.
Really? That was last season?
Yeah, last year.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. This year, I haven't heard too much about the squid. But, you know, I'm all for it. I've been really thinking about doing some squidding out of the kayak.
It's a blast, and it's really easy pickings. You know, it's just a matter of getting onto the spot. Now, on the Sea of Cortez, we were able to paddle 2 miles off the beach into 400 feet of open water. And usually you're fishing a canyon or a seamount, but there was such a massive body, a jumbo squid, that I figured if the local guy said they're in the town north of us and they're in the town south of us, I figure they got to be right in the middle, and I made the right call. Here, they're fished over canyons and seamounts. Excuse me. So I don't know about up there if you'd have to mothership to get into the zone or if you can get them that close to shore that you're only paddling a few miles.
They're generally – the squid are generally being found where the salmon are. So in that case, you're talking 3 to 4 miles.
Well, that's doable.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 to 4, that's 3 to 4 miles on a bad year.
Yeah.
It's a good year. So they're a lot closer place that I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about squid this year.
Yeah, they're running 20 miles here to get the squid to the Cordell Banks.
Now we're running 20 miles to get to tuna right now.
Albacore tuna?
Albacore. Yeah.
Boy, you're wetting my whistle there, Isaac.
Oh, man, I know. You know what? Last week I was supposed to be on a tuna trip. We had a mothership trip out of Newport, Oregon. The weather was beautiful. I mean, we had 90-degree days, full sun.
Nice seas.
You know, the seas were at 3, 4, 5 foot, totally doable until the day our trip was supposed to happen. The seas went up to 8 feet at, 12 seconds and an opposing 25-knot wind.
No.
Yeah.
That's fishing.
I know. I was psyched up. I had the car loaded up. I had all the gear. I was going to go to work, get off work, drive the coast. I had a room. No.
I'm going to give away one of my fishing tips that has worked for everyone for all of time. The best time to go fishing is when I'm heading to an airport to go anywhere. Okay. The fish are going to bite. They're going to be jumping in your boat when I travel, and I will be sure to give you a heads up when that happens.
Hey, I'd appreciate that.
It's a rule of nature by me. It's pretty fun.
I bought myself a brand new fly rod. I just knew I was going to go out. I'm going to catch in Oregon anyway.
You're fishing for albacore with a fly rod?
Sir, I was going to go out there. I was going to catch the first fly rod caught albacore on a kayak in Oregon.
Make sure you take a film crew with you.
Oh, you bet I was going
to. You're going to do it. That'll happen.
Doable. I've got a killer TFO fly rod. It's a 10 weight, kind of light for albacore. Most guys suggest going with 10.
They
suggest going with the 12 weight. Yeah, exactly. I'm fishing from a kayak. The 10 weight is going to be fine. And this TFO rod, TICRX rod, most of the guys that have them say, yeah, it says 10 weight on the rod, but really it's an 11 or a 12. So I was like, dude, this is going to be the perfect rod. Like I said, I had everything in the car. I was ready to go. 10 minutes after I was done loading the car, I got the message, trip canceled.
Oh.
10 minutes after. I was
the big letdown.
Yeah. I tied my own flies. Can't find
I can
two.
Just see that big sardine fly, too.
Oh, man. Big old blue and white.
No.
But, we're still, the tuna season here, we still have a couple of weeks left. So,
much conks out towards the end of September, huh?
Exactly. We still have a couple of weeks left, and I'm on call. The moment the seas drop down,
they get that window of opportunity, they'll reschedule that trip, huh?
Exactly.
Well, I wish you guys the best of luck on that one.
Thanks. This is an El Nino year, so that helps out our tuna fishery.
Right.
It brings them all in really close. Like I said, 20 miles as opposed to 80. So
it's a big difference, especially in those North Coast seas.
Yeah. So we're all just sitting by the phone. We're ready and waiting. And
people don't appreciate 80 miles out of San Diego down into Mexico is one thing. 80 miles for albacore off the North Coast is a whole different TV show.
That it is. Yeah, from Northern California all the way to Alaska, it's completely different water.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, get out there and whack 'em, Isaac.
You bet. Like I said, I've got most of the stuff ready for tomorrow for the bass tournament. I'm going to bring up all my crankbaits here tonight and tie feathers onto the tails and just ready for the morning.
Great.
So,
we'll whack them. Watch the roads. Chip, you got any fishing plans for the weekend?
No, we got a real pretty weekend coming up, but I'm not ready for the water yet. I'm kind of saving myself. I'm going to peak here on the 7th of October when we go up to Chucktown for the boondoggle.
Right.
So tomorrow is
gearing up to do.
Yeah, we got
your young clone going with you.
The clone is on the road with me that weekend, and
I
going to have a great time. Yeah.
That's kind of like your ringer, man. Take a kid with you. You got a good chance of winning any jackpots, anything like that.
Absolutely.
Trophies,
yeah.
Ribbons, whatever. The kids and the chicks will bring it in. And I mean that with all respect.
Well, he has seen that happen in Georgia.
It happen everywhere, man.
Yeah.
No, the clone first tournament, and he won a boat.
Yeah.
My point, exactly. Isaac, think we got to bring these folks out for a boondoggle on the Pacific?
Ooh, yeah.
How awesome would that be?
Oh, yeah.
We just
have
Lings. I think we should come next summer.
But you know what? These guys don't know what to do with more than a half ounce of lead. You give them a 4-ounce jig head, and they don't know what to do with it.
make a presentation.
Yeah.
What's Spike doing with 15 pounds of squid? You know, I was talking about those jumbo squid. I don't think there is a better natural cut bait than those jumbo squid heads. You know, they call in California, they call squid candy bait. And giant squid is like the giant candy bar. I have caught tuna in warm water trolling Milky Way-sized pieces, chunks, just cut out rectangles of giant squid meat behind me. I've sent down tentacles and pieces of tentacles for lingcod, rockfish, every halibut, cabas,
sturgeon,
every species that bites. It is truly a candy bait. And I got to tell you, those heads in the freezer for 6 months, 8 months, no problem. So one of these squid trips, whether you're doing it on your own or you're just getting on a party boat to hit the squid, for bait alone, it's worth the cost, the price of running 20 miles offshore.
Yeah. Yeah, squid's a killer bait for all fish. I mean, we use it here in freshwater. Squid, killer sturgeon bait. Killer. Any time of the year. Any time of the year, you can catch a sturgeon in the river on squid.
They'll eat a saltwater mackerel in the river. I don't know why they wouldn't eat a squid. I never thought about that.
Squid.
Yeah, we got those sturgeons right here in the Santa Monica Bay system.
Yeah.
And in San Francisco. I went to a Giants game in San Francisco Tuesday. I've been walking around town telling people I saw the Dodgers. That's the ingraining.
You can get a fight that way.
You're getting really big trouble around here. And it's funny because when we went over to AT&T Park for the first time, I had never seen it. It's only about 5-6 years old. Beautiful park built right on the water on the bay. One of the smallest infields I've ever seen. There's like no foul lines or anything. They had very little land to build on. And I see a marching band coming from around the bay, around the stadium, and it turned out to be the marching band from one town over. Well, their band uniforms are blue and white, which happened to be the Dodgers uniforms. And last year, the band played at the Giants game, walked out on the field in their blue and white uniforms, and got booed by 40,000 people.
Oh.
They fixed it. This year, they were there for... who did we play? I don't even remember who they played. Oh, they played the Padres, and it was Filipino Appreciation Day. So it was a beautiful harmony from the Annaly Marching Band and the Filipino Band and Dancers. It was very cool. We had a good time. Anyway, that's not fishing. We're past the top of the hour. I want to thank everybody on the chat room who came in and out today. I want to thank Isaac and Greg. I hope you got your line pulling already. And Chip, you are the man. Thank you, sir.
Hey, lines. We'll see you next
week. I hope
week.
Everybody has a nice, safe weekend. Take a look at your State Department of Fish and Wildlife websites. See what the issues that affect anglers are all about. And remember to promote sport fishing, especially kayak fishing, but all of sport fishing, as a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. I want to thank you all again. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, reaching so many anglers. And we'll see you next Friday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern, on kayakfishingradio.com.